G'day, welcome to Into Deep. I'm your host, Jack Rowland, and I hope you're all having a wonderful day. I truly do. Today, I speak with Tom Tanaki. Tom is a writer, a satirist, a YouTuber, an anti-fascist activist, and a persistent pest to racists and far-right drongos. Some of Tanaki's activist projects would include his group Yard or Yelling at Racist Dogs, where the group, as the name suggests, would use disruptive tactics and take aim at high-profile racists. Another was his satirical Aussie nationalist group called the Million Flag Patriots, where the group would dress up in an absurd amount of modified Australian flags and obnoxiously carry on at Reclaim Australia rallies, stealing the media attention away from the anti-Muslim movement, hilariously out-patrioting the most patrioty of patriots. This would create a lot of confusion for both left-wing and right-wing activists and would just make the whole movement look as silly as possible. Over the last few years, Tanaki has ramped up his YouTube content, creating funny and informative videos highlighting some of the opportunistic right-wing grifters that have successfully made names for themselves through this anti-lockdown movement. Check him out on YouTube. His recent video, titled Arvi and His Creepy Security Guard, is a great place to start. I hope you guys enjoy this chat with Tom Tanaki.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply.
Bad luck.
Oh, I have one speed, I have one gear. Go.
I'll tell you when we're getting into deep.
Tom Tanaki, how are you, mate?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you going?
I'm tip top terrific. Lovely.
Hell yeah. Yeah, thanks
lovely
for having us on.
Oh, not at all, man. Not at all. Lovely to meet you. I've just discovered you recently. Isn't it funny? You've been making contact for content for years, and then someone just finds you yesterday.
Yeah, have been going for years, but I also, you know, having listened to a few of your episodes, I understand that, you know, there's a lot of us who are in a captive situation with certain fringe political moments. You know what I mean? I mean, particularly if you look at a month ago, most of us were all stuck at home wondering about these people, you know, walking over the West Gate Bridge and that. And so it is a time during which people can give some insight on that suddenly come across your radar. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I'm down here in the muck waiting around commenting on filth and, you know, arguably filth myself, depends on who you ask. But, you know, so it's never going to be particularly mainstream. But, yeah, I can see where you come across me now of all times, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like we've got some mutual interests just in terms of subject matter, music, all the things, like you said, fringe kind of topics and all that. It's fun stuff, fringe watching, until it all gets a bit dangerous, but which you're no stranger to.
No. But you know, we've had all the bits and bobs, all the accoutrements, all the lovely blessings that come with being down in the muck looking at fringe scum for years and what have you. Not all scum, just the political fringe, if you will. You know what I mean? But yeah. I'm also, you know, as you said, you know, like I probably have been never really considered myself as much of a normie in any respect, you know. So I don't really, like, I notice that people, like, if I do a group political analysis, like, you know, or something like that, but try to infuse it with a bit of humour and sometimes do some, you know, what did I see someone the other day goes, don't look at any of his weird avant-garde attempts at humour. Just look at the analysis types, you know, ditch the rest of it, don't I? Might hurt me a bit because I'm like, well, actually, the avant attempts at humour is what I really love doing.
Yeah.
I just don't do as much of it as I should. But, you know, I've never really seen myself as much of a normie. I notice that there's a lot of deep, bone-deep normies in the political analysis space. You know what I mean? Like, I'll sort of, like, be following something for their political takes and then realise that they, like, don't like music. There's a lot of really, like, big political Twitch streamers like Hassan or Vosh or what have you, and they don't even like music. And I think that's creepy, actually.
Creepy,
like,
yeah.
No diss to them. But I think that's creepy, or there'll be, like, a lot of people who'll go, like, oh, Taylor Swift album. And I'm like, I mean, cool, you do, boo, but, like, we are not the same.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep,
so,
yep.
Anyway, I conceive of myself as waiting about in the muck, so I'm glad you took notice anyway.
No, fantastic. And that was kind of, like, one thing that I find so refreshing is because, you know, we still kind of – we're in Australia, so there just doesn't seem to be as much of, like, a boom of different kind of, you know – talking heads or humorous, digestible kind of political people making political commentary as there is like in America. Like, you know, I still kind of fill my head with listening to so much of American politics. So it's always awesome when, you know, people like yourself and Friendly Geordies are kind of, you know, just making it all digestible in the most humorous ways possible. But yeah,
I can't do what Friendly Geordie stars like. He's a parliamentary politics nerd, and you know, love it or not, like, you know, just that is not like I know about parliamentary politics. I just don't think it really inspires me to really aim down the direction of talking about it. You can't talk politics and culture and society in the fringe and what have you without addressing that to a degree. But I also just don't think this doesn't particularly motivate me or inspire me. And it's just not the direction I generally tend to head in. And I generally tend to head in the direction of like assessing and looking at whatever's going on in various little fringe things. Hey, we haven't been for any shortage of interesting new fringe movements though throughout the pandemic. So I had someone say to me at some point last year that it seemed like I'd found my new true north through looking at fringe conspiracy things through the pandemic. And that's probably true. You know, you do get, it's not just, I was going to say you get sick of talking about Nazis. I'm an anti-fascist first and foremost, but it's not just that. It's also they're actually quite dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to balance how often you talk about it or whether you'll just like do the organising stuff, which I also do on top of the, it ain't just commentary, you know, but you think to yourself, what you got to ration out you know, I'm going to show up and do things at some point in the future. I have years of that in the past and I'll be doing it again in future. This is not just a talking head. I'm not like a lot of people in America or what have you, we're just full-time YouTubers and all they ever do is just talk all fucking day and do shit. You know what I mean? If you're someone that does shit and you pop up at things, you just have to consider, you know what I mean, what's best, what's safest, and maybe some of the best organising stuff you could do is behind the scenes, you know. But, hey, we've all been stuck at home through the pandemic, so I've been doing a lot of talking head shit, man.
Yep, totally. So, yeah, the first kind of I just came across you the other day. A friend sent me one of your recent videos titled "Avi Yemini and His Creepy Bodyguard," and awesome, hilarious, loved it. But I've done a few episodes. You know, it's like you said, it's kind of unavoidable about the pandemic, about the freedom/anti-lockdown movement. You know, just kind of talking about in my opinion, the totally misguided nature of the whole movement, you know, and also like in this weird time, like it's a really nuanced situation that we're in, you know, and people are really trying to paint everything as black and white, and there's a lot of mistrust for the media, there's a lot of mistrust for the politicians, all totally understandable. But the thing that's just really been winding me up more than it should be are these little bloody opportunistic people that have just kind of popped up that we all seem to be aware of now, you know, like and how effective they are. You know, they really seem to be. I've got so many friends and stuff that are following these kind of Instagram or Twitter movement people. You know, you've got like Reignite Democracy Australia by Monica Smith. Avi Yemini would probably be the one that just irritates me the absolute most. I've got a huge...
He's got magic capacity to irritate people, I find. Yeah, he really does. He's a deeply annoying person. Yeah.
But I they're very effective at kind of, you know, pushing and finding conflict and revving up the conflict and getting people kind of revved up. I'm probably more talking about Avi here. But the amount of people that I know that just seem to be kind of consuming this that haven't actually taken, not even a deep look, just to kind of look at like, are these people genuine? Because you can go into these Instagram page and you can see which mutual followers are following them, and they seem to be all following the same pages. And you've been like I kind of said earlier, you've been following a lot of these characters for quite a while.
I have.
Yeah.
And that becomes very helpful when you are trying to dispel some of the amnesiac bullshit that they peddle.
Right.
You said that you'll suddenly find throughout a topical wave of you know, dissent or discourse like the lockdown, that suddenly someone like Avi will pop up and, in your radar, and suddenly because of a campaign they do or what have you, or 10, your friends will suddenly get onto them. And, Avi is a prodigiously talented self-promoter and he's got a great capacity to constantly self-style and restyle himself as whatever is most career advantageous for him at the time. And at the moment it's been, ever since last year, it's been styling himself as a journalist, 2019, 2020. That actually began. I'll be publishing the second of the two-part thing about these citizen journalists. I did a little quote fingers mark there because it's a sign there, because they're not really, they're not actually that. They lean into the title of journalist because in Harvey's case, because he started getting, escorted away by the police for being under breach of the peace rules, but basically being threatened with being arrested for something. And the reason that was happening was that we knew that there'd be coppers at rallies, so we would start always approaching him, surrounding him, not attacking him. In fact, I'm strictly non-violent in the way that I'll organise things, but this is a person who harasses activists and makes them into content. You let him do that, he'll dox you, he'll fucking harass you, he'll get thousands of people in your inbox threatening you, and it'll all be so that he can get subscribers and money. So you cannot let him do that. I've never been one to roll over and let someone like that do that at the expense of legitimate activist causes, and I've been doing anti-racist, anti-fascist organising or being a pest or trolling or what have you for a very long time. Nowadays it's more about commentary. So I've been around for long enough to see these different restylings that he's been through. So I can keep the time. I can tell you about these things. I can tell you about what he was in 2018, 19, 2021. That's the enemy of what people like him are doing, because they're peddling amnesiac bullshit. Mm. Now, he'll come up in your radar because you're worried about you've got this ambient sense, you're an apolitical person, the pandemic hits, you've got this ambient sense that because you can't go to the shops without a mask on, your freedoms, you've got a very myopic sense of freedoms that they're being taken away from you. Well, suddenly this journalist comes in and he gets confiscated away by the police, and he gets to go, in the pandemic, they're even arresting journalists. But funnily enough, it was only happening to him. It wasn't really. It's not like half of the journalists haven't been pepper sprayed or what have you, but no one's ever been escorted away repeatedly like him. You see, need someone like me who's been around for years to come in and say, well, actually, that was happening to him before the pandemic, and that's because his original career thing is about him harassing activists. That's why the coppers had fingered him in particular, because they know who he is, because he's Avi Yemeni. He's a career pest and inciter of conflict at rallies because it makes him money. So having been around a long time becomes, it starts to, I suppose, pay its dividends in terms of commentary anyway, you point out a cast of influencers and they're all opportunists, but they have they're seeking different opportunities. Monica Smith of Red Democracy Australia is seeking political opportunity. She raised $250,000 for not having accepted her bail condition. She didn't need that money for that, but it was a good fundraising angle.
$250,000.
And, now there's – yeah, she did in about a week or two. There's a very middle class, happy to shell out cash at any point, affluent block of people who are just going to throw all their money at this. They think that slacktivism equates – political movement, And so her aims are to, do deals with parties, like they're doing a bit of a deal with Unite Australia Party, it might seem at the moment, and they're going to try and turn all this latent ambient anti-lockdown froth into voting bots. There's other people. There's a guy called Ricardo Bosi. He's a fucking hack. He's a piece of shit. He really is a horrible cunt. Now, I've been seeing him around since 2016, 17. He was rocking up at far-right anti-immigration rallies and talking about the Muslims and this and that. You know, whatever works, they're fundamentally opportunists. That's different to someone like Avi Yemeni. What opportunity does he get about it? He doesn't even care about politics. He just wants money, you know. But he'll use the collectivism fundraising machine and this journalist title as a way to harness political, ambient political sentiment to make him money so that he gets dinner. And you have this anointed class of particularly motivated opportunist grifters who they essentially guide the will of the anti-lockdown movement. But, you know, the practice of it is it's a bunch of conspiracy fucking Telegram groups. You know, I know you've looked into some of that, haven't you? You know, like that's just a bunch of people passing bullshit back and forth. They're very ideologically ambivalent, you know, malleable. So the best grifter, the best opportunist can come in and shape that will towards their own ends because they don't really have a shaped political will. You know, but I've been watching that since the beginning and I've been around since a long time before that. So it's helpful to be able to point out what those pests are doing and, you know, what their histories are in some of their cases.
Yeah. I tried to ask old mate John Safran about Avi because he wrote about him a fair bit in his book on extremists, which was another funny.
Yeah, which I just reread the other day, actually. Yeah. It depends on what you mean by extremist. Yeah.
And he dodged that question like a politician there, which I thought was kind of funny. Love John Safran, no shade, but yeah, I mean, I think he's probably just said his piece on the guy and he's happy to move on. But
yeah, I enjoyed Safran's book. I enjoyed it more in the second read with a little bit more of the dust settled on that sort of Patriot Movement era. I did, you know, I think having listened to your Safran interview, I think my criticisms of it were something that he actually seemed to address when he talked to you. I thought it seemed a little bit like tourism. Like I thought, I noticed that in the promotion for it that he was like, really into talking about how I did shots with Neil Erickson and I'm like, oh, yay, congrats, bro. But also I have to remember that when he was compiling that, 15, 16, as he said to you in that interview, the alt-right phenomenon wasn't the tidal wave that it came to be. And so I can say it seems a little bit irresponsible to not have tied a bit more political analysis or history or what have you into there or to, you know, sort of like play some independent third-party role in which you equate the snippiness or rudeness of lefties, because they are, all lefties are fucking rude, particularly activist lefties, they're all rude. But he was sort of equating that, you know, with like the sentiment of the Reclaim Australia movement. You know what I mean? He was going, oh, they're bad for that reason. They're bad. I'm an independent, you know, I'm just doing my thing over here on the side. And I didn't think those two things were equal, you know what I mean? Right. I didn't think they were. But he said it himself. He said he probably, you know, if he could do it over again, he'd put a bit more insight. So it was an interesting interview he did with you. But, yeah, you know, also with Avi, he's, yeah, features in his book, but Avi was a
different version,
but he
hadn't. Different version of himself
he
at
was,
that point.
He hadn't restyled himself into the full. He was just beginning to realise, at that time of Safran's interviews with him, he was beginning to realise, oh, I love self-promoting my IDF gym, but what I really love is self-promoting.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I think the whole Trump tidal wave, they call it populism. It's really just opportunism, you know, tactical racism. Whatever gets you opportunities, that's what Trump was good at. That's what Avi tried to be good at. You know, Avi was just realising that what I really like is promoting myself in videos. You know, he was just in transitioning into that at that time. So he wasn't the full piece of shit he went on to be, you know. Yeah.
Look, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like a lot of people are kind of cluing on to who he, you know, who he kind of is, but also his popularity is just growing so super quickly as well. And, you know, like, look, I don't try to rag on people too often at you know, wherever I can avoid it. But, like, yeah, I mean, just kind of knowing a bit about who he is. I mean, like, you know, first and foremost, he was convicted of throwing a chopping board at his wife's head in 2016, convicted in Australia. You know, she described.
Well, the accusation in court at the time was that he threw a knife at his ex-wife, and that was what was brought up in court.
Oh.
Basically, he said that, oh, no, I don't remember that. I remember that it was a chopping block. And, of course, a chopping block is a lower class of weapon than a knife, so it comes with a lesser degree of penalty. So he said, oh, well, you know, I recall that it was a chopping block, lower class of weapon, so I will plead guilty just to get this over and done with, I suppose, in exchange for that. But, yeah, I mean, so the question is, and, you know, a question I look forward to asking it, Harvey himself, next time I inevitably see him at a rally. I'm always looking for him. He's always running away from us, actually. I don't know if this is made clear from his videos. I'm pretty sure it's not. But Harvey does his level best to run away from people like us because he doesn't want us to ruin his videos, and we know exactly how to do it. But, you know, one good question that you could ever ask him, listeners, if you're ever seeing him at a rally, is, was it a knife or a chopping board? And you know, I must say, as someone who was one of the people who began the art of bringing that up, the art, it's not an art, the tactic of bringing that up with RV Yemeni videos, I really, really don't want to. There's a lot I can't say with that, but I really don't want it to appear as though I revel in the subject of domestic violence or even just think of it as a cool own on someone rather than, you know, an actual traumatic thing that's happened to a woman. I don't at all. But the question is that this, you know, does this shameless, opportunist moral arbiter, or would-be moral arbiter at rallies, do they get to go out, harass, own, dox people and moralise in this kind of paper-thin opportunist way? Do they get to do that at free will at the expense of real activist movements? You know what I mean? Like refugee rights is real shit. Environmental rights activism is real shit. Animal rights activism is real shit. You know what I mean? All these scenes are real. And he's not to be taken seriously. And, in fact, what we pioneered really was not the art of talking about domestic violence in a way as to cheapen it, but really it was just the art of how do you ruin his videos.
Yeah.
That's what we became good at. We've been doing it for years, you know what I mean? Probably stolen countless potential ACE videos and therefore countless dinners out of RV Yemeni's mouth, and that brings me great joy as an anti-fascist activist.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the list does go on. I'm really not just trying to dig up every horrible thing someone's done, but I just feel like in this case, considering how effective he is and how many people that I know that seem to think it's kind of relatively legitimate. I mean, at the CMFEU, you know, big fight slash protest, like all of them are chanting his name, RV, RV. And I saw him when I went to one of the marches and they were all hugging him and treated like a celebrity there at these things. I mean, but yeah, I mean, just quickly,
They gain this real folkloric status. They really, really have obtained that. Yeah.
But, you know, like going back to like the Safran book, in that he's really talking about how RV got in a bit of hot water for signing up Aussies to fight in Israel in the IDF. You know, which is like, you got plenty of those.
I mean, you know, it was always very good at getting the Herald Sun to write about him. I mean, you know, that's always his great talent. I mean, yeah, so he, you know, at the time of RV's book, you know, of John Safran's book, RV had a successful gym and, you know, a place in the media doing, you know, occasional controversial stunts, that kind of thing. You know, the RV you read about in the Safran book is a opportunist, you know, but with a business and what have you. And, you know, I suppose the notable thing is that what RV went on to do after that, the course of that book or through the end of it and, you know, in the years after, was to train wreck that business, train wreck his family life, train wreck everything that he had because of how much he enjoyed doing controversial right-wing videos. And it's important to know about him, and I do know because I've been following him and indeed countering him and standing opposite him in a rally or sometimes right in front of him. You know, we've met. He shook my hand just before he got whisked away by the coppers, so we never got to have our big run-in that's been fated for years. But, you know, he's been out there for years. He's been, you know, approaching people at rallies for years. He's been changing his presentation, you know, of who he is at years to suit the circumstances. I mean, one minute he's a Muslim basher. The next minute he's anti-lefties, you know, he's telling the coppers, oh, yeah, shoot to kill, you know, with the activists, because that's really funny, right? Yep. Next minute he's an anti-police brutality activist. He's always just doing whatever's like,
just blatant self-promotion, you know, just no real beliefs.
Yeah, it gives him the best.
Yeah.
And people have no sense of what constitutes, you know, of how these grifters work in Australia, right? And that, you know, people are casually interested in politics at best, most people, but the pandemic has forced everyone to interact with politics in whatever way is given to them. But what most people are given, I'm sure you'll agree, is not the real reality of the pandemic. I mean, people don't really, you know, they're not like, they were there in 2020 looking at doctors trading advice with each other whilst they were being slammed in states in America. You know, they weren't there. They probably don't know about the entire apartment blocks full of dead families in India when it, you know, probably five plus million more people than were even documented died. So, you know, I mean, that's the economist said that probably in the range of 13 plus million people have actually died. They just don't have the way of documenting it because, you know, India hadn't documented a lot of its dead, you know. People don't know about the real pain and the real cost of the pandemic. What they do know about is Anastasia Palaszczuk / Dan Andrews, you know, like that, the drip feed of stats and of chief health officers changing their mind about these bureaucratic measures daily. And eventually they get sick of it. And that's all they really hear about from Channel 7. And then they see someone like Avi Yemini in their Facebook feed and they think, oh, finally, someone's calling out this bullshit. Because they don't really get any engagement with the broader politics of the pandemic because they don't really give a shit about the politics. And anyway, you know what? Being into politics before the pandemic turns out was a bit of a vaccine. It was a vaccine against the bullshit of these grifters, because if you knew that this shameless prick would just, you know, glom onto any scene and make shit up, you would have been, you go, oh, this guy, oh, here we go, this guy's in this scene. Maybe I should second guess the merits of his messaging. But well, if that, you didn't know about any point of that, suddenly, you know.
I mean, that's such a really good point because, like, I really think that, you know, I'm pretty critical of, you know, the movement. But look, there's some genuine concerns, and there are people who have lost everything. There are people who, you know, I've kind of relayed all this before, but you know there are actual issues with the vaccine. Proportionately, they are extremely disproportionate to the problems with COVID. Somehow people seem to think that equates somehow. But you know, look, if I had someone that had died from a blood clotting or myocarditis or something, I could totally see how my view would drastically change, and I would be like, my healthy friend passed away when they were forced to get a vaccine. That being said, I haven't really seen too many people that I think kind of rational or genuine kind of tackling any of these things, which does just make me think, like, I can poke holes in all of it. Avi being the most obvious one. I mean, Monica Smith being another one, leader of Reignite Democracy Australia. Like, I went on her Instagram just kind of scrolling through, and she's got one post that says, a fun way to share the truth. What will you name your Wi-Fi? And then her Wi-Fi name is There's No Pandemic 5. So, you know, it's not just about, hey, look, there's a bit of government overreach, we need to keep an eye on that. She's kind of revealing more that she's actually like, this is all a hoax, and appealing to that kind of mind frame. And I think that's what a lot of people...
Well, that's content creator stuff, isn't it? I mean, that just sounds like something that, like, a content creator or an influencer would post. Oh, this would be a fun bit of content, you know, like saying something like that, you know, and that's what they are. I mean, you know, you spoke to Scobie from What's Doing Media, who said to you that, you know, that they were struck by how much these people love being in front of the camera. And that's particularly true of Monica. I get a real, like, I am happy to be, happy as fuck to be here vibe from her. Like, she's just delighted. She's delighted. You know, there's this fantastic moment earlier on in the rally. And, you know, I've written at length about the intersection of, like, or the way of looking at the anti-lockdown spectacle through the lens of the French Marxist philosopher Guy Debord's piece called Society of the Spectacle, which suggests that as material conditions of a society decline, through late-stage capitalism, that people more and more interpret all events through the lens of, like, representative spectacle and the like, and you see that pop up through everyone, pre-packaging, like, sort of filtered, twice, thrice filtered events that through the, you know, everything is a spectacle, everything is a big event, everything is a borrowed, cheesy, you know, thing from a movie or what have you. We've seen all the Braveheart stuff, you know what I mean? Like, people obsessed with, like, you know, doing, like, literally they've reached the point at which they're doing, like, excerpts from Braveheart's speech at the end of the Mel Gibson movie. Like, they're just doing that at rallies now, you know, and they paint their face up. I mean, obviously at the New South Wales, Queensland border, we saw them dressing up. But I remember this amazing event with Monica Smith where she goes, and she did this speech and she's just like, she goes, and she had a glove on, one glove on the whole time, and then at the end of it, and she goes, the kids' gloves are off. And she, and everyone goes,
yeah.
Great spectacle. And you could say she was just peaking, bro.
Yeah.
Like, she was fucking peaking. You know, the pill had come up, man. She was fucking loving it. You know, they're so into their spectacle. They love it so much. I actually can't do rallies without it, you know. Like, it's amazing. It's the most entertaining part. I'm endlessly entertained by the anti-lockdown movement. They are funny as fuck, you know. They're really funny people.
But yeah, I mean, that the thing like with Monica Smith, and yeah, it definitely looks like it's a kind of political, hopefully going to be a political, you know, career for her that she's kind of building. But yeah,
that's what she's hoping.
Yeah, when you do see, like, there's no pandemic, to me, like, I mean, how can you take this seriously? And I think this is what seems to be happening with a lot of people, right? So we've all been, you know, battered by these bloody lockdowns and these restrictions, and look, like, this new kind of the forced vaccine mandate, well, you know, kind of making businesses you know, forcibly get their workers to be vaccinated, I think I have a problem with that. I think that's I don't think that's good, particularly when I'm vaxxed. I'm double vaxxed. I think the vax is the best shot that we've got at the moment. But, you know, like, it's effectiveness seems to wane around 6 months, possibly. We haven't got all the data in. Yeah. You know, it's not a huge long-term end solution. Then there's, like, top-ups and stuff. So I kind of think, look, if it's not the best it could be, or if there's still a bit of work to do, or at least, you know, we don't even have every option to choose from in Australia.
Here's what I generally think about that. Now, so the rhetoric of the anti-lockdown movement is regularly to talk about forced vaccines. But literally, technically, what a forced vaccine is, and this has happened throughout the world before, yes, sure. So it does warrant clarifying that it means people strapping you down and injecting you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's not happening here. What is happening here is what they call nudge policy. And nudge policy ain't anything new in Australia. Again, I think this is not me just quibbling here. This is a very important distinction because it lets us decide what we think and how we react to it from there. Mm. Nudge policy, we've already been doing it with infants. So what happens if you don't bring your infant along to get the MMR vaccine? Well, they don't confiscate the child and force the vaccine into the child. They implement nudge policy on a government level. They stop you from being able to access certain Centrelink benefits, and they stop you from being able to enter the child into mainstream schooling. Now, is that great? No, I've always, pre-pandemic, I've had concerns about this. And one concern is that you end up with people who might, over the medium to long term, create enclaves. So what is it? Look at an area like Murrumbimby in the northern rivers of New South Wales. You have an average vaccination rate for children there of about 70%, as opposed to like 95% plus in the rest of the country. And that's because they're all moving to enclaves. They're like, you know, I can't send my child to mainstream schooling in this area, but I can get together with a community of people and, you know, our kids can all play with each other and this and that. And they can do 10 childcare together more among the like-minded out in certain areas. So that's already been happening. And we haven't been doing it for the 30 to 40 years that it takes to learn the really long-term consequences of that. We haven't been doing it all that long. So I think it's important to say Australia's already been doing that. So it ain't no fucking surprise that we would start to implement nudge policies with this vaccine as well. I think that, so the question is, what do we think about the government waiting for the government to do the inevitable thing that the government would inevitably do and to apply the same nudge policy to this vaccine that they would to other things? I sit there constantly being told by anti-lockdown persons that I'm a government activist, that I'm a government bootlicker because I, you know, believe in the vaccine and what have you. I believe that it's a public health crisis and that what we should do is actually be bullying each other, not waiting for Big Daddy government to bully us, but actually be bullying each other. So we take the CFMEU thing. The CFMEU had a fundamental collapse in their real responsibility to the health and safety of their workers there. Can you imagine how different that fucking week would have looked if instead of it being preceded by John Setka going, oh, well, you know, just, you know, get it if you want, but it's not mandatory. If it was Setka coming out and saying, no, we're a union. This is about the health and safety of our workers, the collective health and safety of our workers, and we're a collectivist institution. You can't do a union job anymore and you can't be a CFMEU member if you haven't got the jab. In the same way that they would say, you can't come on, you know, we're not going to send you to a union job if they're not going to implement all the other worker health and safety protocols. What's the difference between you going along to a job where a girder falls in your head and you going along to a job where your fucking lungs fall out a few weeks down the track? It's collective health and safety. And I know that the vaccine isn't ideal, but I do know that recent studies have come out, speaking of collectivism, showing that you're 20 times less likely to pass the virus on to other people if you've been double vaccinated. That's all I need to know. Fuck your individual health. We're talking about communal expectations. But does it look cool when we wait for Big Daddy government to be the ones to go, you know, like Setka was doing? He was putting it off. He was going, oh, well, no, we're not. It's the government's fault. It's not ours. Well, don't fucking wait for them. The best thing that's happened in this pandemic among us people, grassroots activists, fucking the common fucking Joe out there, has been mutual aid. And that's people, that's the lefties, the one that they went out there fucking yelling about fuck all on the Westgate Bridge. They've been feeding homeless people for the entire time. You know, they've been fucking breaking their back doing stuff for people who've been down and out through the pandemic. You know, that's been a mutual aid stuff. That's like a organizing online. You know, some of the amazing groups that came up in the early pandemic. That is, in a grassroots way, technology and a pragmatic thing of like, okay, we've got a crisis here. Let's all get together and organize a little, you know what I mean, technology of how we can help each other. That's been amazing. The vaccine is a technology. It is, you know what I mean? And it's actually been a really life-saving technology. The best things about the response to the pandemic, therefore, have been pragmatism and technology. And I find it really notable that all the anti-lockdown activists get stuck in like an ideological malaise of going, but what about freedom? And you can ask them, what do you mean by freedom? I'm not dumb. I know what you generally mean, but what specifically do you mean? Because I know you don't mean the freedom of my comrades who are frontline healthcare workers to not bear the entire brunt, completely ignored by the world, of the pandemic, while you sit there and you go out to the shops and you don't wear a fucking mask and you don't participate, you know? I want to be the one in my friendship group to be a pragmatist and to endorse the technology of the pandemic and to say, let's get all through it. Fucking get it. So when my mate says, oh, I don't know, what about freedom? I fucking sit down with him if I can. You can't burn every bridge if someone's really, really, you know what I mean? You can't do that. And people have this problem with their families turning into red-pilled anti-vaxxers to the pandemic. So it's been tough. Mm. But I'm saying, in theory, I want to be the one to get them through. I want my I do want my employer to fucking force you to do it. I want them to do it because it's a collective health and safety matter, and I'm a collectivist. And I don't think you should be forced, strapped down to have the vaccine. No, I don't. I don't think that at all. But that's not what's about to happen, is it? But you might lose your job. You might lose your job. And what's going to happen if a couple of decades down the track is that they're all going to go to the fucking enclaves, aren't they? But it's and that remains a concern of mine. But we're in a real crisis and we need collective health measures to get ourselves out of it. So I don't know. So this is a long rant I've just gone on, bro.
No.
I realise that. But I'm saying it's like a pragmatist anarchist in a way. I want collectivist and community institutions to force each other or to encourage each other or to make it a requirement of each other. And I know that there's this lingering thing in the background of how the government are going to start putting all these nudge policies in. I don't like it. I'm not comfortable with it, but I am comfortable with being part of community institutions who force it in the same way. I don't even want us to wait for the government to force it upon us. I want us to be the ones that force each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I guess you know. I mean, my kind of concerns would only be the fact that it's just this giant blanket thing. I would prefer that there is no kind of mandate. You know, there's things like if people have got natural antibodies, I think that should count for something in terms of whether they can work or not. You know, I worry about black and white thinking, to be honest. I worry about a black and white approach from the government, and I worry about people responding to that black and white approach from the government or whatever, and then they turn really black and white thinking. So kind of, you know, what I see happening a lot is, you know, this very effective kind of increase of conspiratorial thinking and tyranny, you know, this idea that communism is coming and tyranny is coming and Dictator Dan is actually a dictator who's only goal is to take your freedoms because that gives him a stiff dick. And that's kind of where people seem to be kind of going with it. As soon as one thing crosses the line, they don't kind of like, you know, I think he's crossed the line a few times. I thought he was very, very good up until a point. I don't even know. It's so complicated. Like there's so many things to consider.
Are you talking about the Labor government? I mean, the Labor government's police overreach and the like, and the bureaucratic madness of the pandemic has seen no end, you know? We've got a bunch of state government fiefdoms who've all been in active competition with each other at times, you know, or at the very least have, like, had their own competing visions of how we'll get out of the pandemic, and a federal government that were more than happy to just sit in the background and just wash their hands of anything, you know?
Totally.
I don't think there's ever been any point to doing lockdowns for any sustained period of time unless you pay people comprehensively to stay at home, for example. And we did that for many people, not all, but did that throughout 2020, and that was amazing, and that led the way, and that probably was instrumental in why we were so effective at squashing the coronavirus, you know what I mean, in areas of Australia. But then Delta came along and it just became impracticable. But, you know, I mean, some of the most horrible stuff has been seeing the VicPol stormtroopers out in the streets, you know, with the anti-lockdown protests. That's been absolutely horrendous. I've also seen, you know, some of these, like, you know, they ain't glam. These lefties that have been doing mutual aid and feeding the homeless and feeding the down and out and the like throughout the pandemic, they ain't glam like singing Darryl Braithwaite songs on top of the Westgate Bridge is glam, but they've been doing better work than any of these motherfuckers and all of them put together the entire time, because they, in an actual crisis, have been dealing with people. And you know what they've had to deal with the entire fucking time? And when I say this, I mean specific groups. I mean like the people from Cuddle, the community Union Defence League. They're a bunch of commies and they feed the homeless, and they have been being chased out of town by coppers under COVID legislation the entire time while they tried to feed these people who weren't getting any other fucking food from anywhere because it was a pandemic and all these social services were fucking limited or shut down and what have you, you know. So they've been dealing with that fucking bullshit the entire time, you know what I mean? They haven't been having rubber bullets shot at them, but they've been being fined and that kind of thing. And that's all a horrendous overreach. But that was all voted in years ago. People voted that in 2018. And the first people to say it were like activists, you know? Like, ask any environmental activists, you know, ask people, ask the people who went to the anti-mining IMARC blockade in 2019, which, might I add, R.B. Emini was standing at the front of telling the coppers to shoot the activist. You know, what was happening there? I mean, the coppers went horrendous. It was just like a orange cloud of pepper spray. A police horse broke a young girl's, both of her legs. This has been happening since they had all these fucking toys. They were voted in under, you know, law and order, you know. Fucking everyone's worried about the Apex gang and the Libs campaign on an anti-African crime crisis fucking thing. So Dan Andrews instead was like subsume their message by going, oh, well, let's just staff up VicPol more. Let's give them more toys. So that shit's already been happening for years. And I've been objecting to it with my comrades, you know, my far left extremist comrades, because we've been seeing it for years, you know. So I'm sorry, it's another rant there, but I just wanted to say,
no, that's great.
That is just one of many objections, you know, to Daniel Andrews. I've got a long litany of objections, and it's pandemic specific ones, like, you know, why'd you shut down the predominantly African housing tower? Why didn't you do that? I didn't notice that happen in Touareg. You know? Right. Why'd you do that? There's been so many questions about Andrew's conduct, you know. It's just been that the anti-lockdown people have been the people that they seem to think they have the only license over discussing these issues, like the only person that has the right to discuss the travails of the pandemic and the bullshit of the Andrews government is some fucking coronavirus denialist. And I've always been like, fuck you. No, you don't even think the virus is real, man. You don't get to be the person that talks about the nuance and the various, but you think that the vaccine is the virus, you scamdemic cunt. You don't think, you don't have the right to talk about how specific policies. You are led around by the coattails by a bunch of fucking alt-right parasites, and it might not be fundamentally an alt-right movement, but they let these parasites lead them around because they've got no real ideology, they've got no real principle. They're like, oh, what's the best spectacle? You know, where's Monica Smith taking her glove off? Where's Avi Yemeni pretending to be a journalist and making me pay him hundreds of thousands of dollars for a fundraiser that does fucking nothing? They've got no principle, nothing. They're just led around by the biggest shining bright light, and they stand in the street going, freedom, on the shrine of remembrance, and it all counts for nothing, you know. So I want to have that conversation with you about the bullshit of Andrews. I want to have it with my comrades. I want to have it in my videos. I don't want to involve them because I don't believe that they care about public safety. I just think they care about spectacle, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm pretty prepared to kind of go into the nuances of all this.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, kind of like I was saying before, people seem like they're getting to a point and then they're kind of almost falling back into it's all bullshit. Instead of being like, no, I have a problem with that specific policy or instance, they start opening their ears to, you know, just like people who don't believe that it's real. People that believe that the vaccine is completely ineffective. And, you know, like I've listened to like some of the podcasts on kind of that like Rogan's done a few times recently, and I've just turned them off because one thing that just really kind of annoys me about all this, and like, yes, there's hypocrisy. Yes, there's double standards. Like, yeah, there's a lot of fucking fuckery going on. But I don't really see many of these anti-lockdown, anti-vax people offering kind of any valid alternative to what should be done with this public health crisis that's really fucked.
Correct.
They don't have one. Exactly. So like one thing that I've kind of heard quite often is like, you know, we've got to protect the vulnerable. That seems to be a talking point that they spout quite often. What does that mean, protect the vulnerable? Does that mean segregate them? You know, like, does that mean like get the vulnerable people and not let them participate? Does it mean mandate the vaccine to the vulnerable? Like, I don't really know what they mean by we have to protect the vulnerable. Or do they
just... Because I have this big line about the shadow pandemic, which is true. I mean, the mental health thing has been fucked. You know, I went to Bits last year, and I'm the person that like makes my bones out of doing, hopefully doing incisive commentary about the fucking, you know, some of this stuff when it comes to lockdown measures and the like. I just drank myself to oblivion last year. I went to Bits, and I think everyone, you know what I mean? We all felt it, and we want to talk about mental health, and great, but we have to say, what's the second part of the sentence with those people when it comes to like talking about the, you know, all the mental health aspects or things like that? The second part is that they're going, oh, the mental health effects are fucked. Second part is, so stop the lockdowns. So that's your answer, is it? So if you just stop it, it's like, that's it, is it? What's that old song, that old 30 song? Oh, stop the world and let me off, round and round and round. That's our answer. It's just stop the thing that's happened that I don't like. Sorry, but not an answer in a public health crisis. Sorry, it's real and the virus is real. So, sorry, we've got to do something. We can't just stop it all. Sorry.
Well, you know, I guess that's
we can
it.
Have a chat.
I get more and more like it's kind of hard to have a nuanced conversation with a lot of people because, you know, they cross a point where it's all bullshit. We're all being lied to, and that just seems to be more and more effective. And the thing is, if there's so many moving parts here, you know, you and I've always believed, you know, action. I'd far prefer action than just inaction and incompetence. And that's the thing. Like I feel like I'm constantly being pushed into a position where I'm like defending Dan Andrews, where I'm just like, I'm not really all about him anymore. I kind of think he's become very divisive. I don't really know how the country's gonna just get on with it.
Yeah, I refuse to entertain these conversations that are basically like enshrined in like parasocial relationships or parasocial rivalries with state premiers. That is not the pandemic. You know what I mean? And yes, they enforce the constantly changing, often bureaucratically ludicrous, jarringly hypocritical policies that change every day. You can wear a hat here until 11 p.m. you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You got to wear a mask there unless you're sitting down with a coffee in your hand, and then you can't. If you look at those things, then yeah, they make no fucking sense at all because they're the chief bureaucrats and state politicians' attempts to legislate on and to police a pandemic. Do I like the way that Australia has filled all the gaps of the pandemic response with cops, like fucking polyfiller, like blue polyfiller, as they have done? You know what I mean? Anything that we don't have a great answer to, let's just throw heaps of cops and their weapons at it. You know, no, I don't agree with that either. But can we have a discussion about, you know, what it is exactly that they're doing that's fucked? And can we have a discussion with each other about those things that's predicated on the idea that the virus is actually real and that we can't just stop responding to the pandemic? We can adjust it, but we can't just stop. We might even be able to stop lockdowns. In fact, we're going to. Great. Fuck yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because if you ain't paying people to stay at home, as we've learned with Delta waves this year in Sydney, you know, you're not going to be able to stop it anyway because essential workers are going to spread it around. You know what I mean? It's not, you can't do it. The only thing I do a lockdown is pay everyone. And actually, people go loopy anyway through solitary fucking confinement at home. So you can't do that forever. We know that now. But I don't want, you know, if you are a denialist, if I catch you being a denialist in the little gaps in the things you're not saying, sorry, you don't have a seat at the table for the discussion. You don't have it because you don't believe in it. You don't believe in caring for the sick, in caring for the immunocompromised, the elderly, the people who are really going to get fucked over by this virus. You don't believe in caring for the real working class of the pandemic, which is our healthcare workers, okay? It's not tradies. It's not people pretending to be tradies in high vis on the Westgate, bro. It's healthcare workers who have to break their fucking back dealing with the waves that come with the coronavirus. They're the real working class and they're about to get fucking done in. You know, if we can't be responsible about wearing our masks, getting our vaccines and what have you, you know. If you can't have those conversations, if you're a denialist, sorry, I just don't, you know, until you can change your tune, you can't, you're not a responsible participant in this conversation, you know? And a lot of these people, as you say, have real frustrations, but they're co-opted by grifters and liars like RV Emini. And then they just become useless, don't they? You know, they end up on the West Gate. They're not doing nothing.
Well, I guess that's kind of where I, you know, because I, there's the bloody grifters and then there's the people that are kind of taking this situation seriously, but there's an increasing amount of people in between, and I don't really want to turn my back on that lot. You know, I think miss, like, where we've now got this weird thing, like, I don't know, social media, for example, where they've been feeding, you know, algorithms that'll turn people into places like QAnon or vaccine hesitancy. They've been effective. Now that those people are on board, those people are being silenced by social media. You're like, oh, you're anti-vax, which we coaxed you into. You've just been deplatformed. So, like, you've got all these things that are feeding back into the conspiracy. And I really feel for a lot of these people that are feeling completely disenfranchised. They've lost all faith in government, in science, which I think is completely, like, just, yeah, I don't know.
You're right. They've been co-opted by parasites and con artists and liars who have agendas of their own. And I agree with you. I've been talking about the anti-lockdown movement and the like from the very beginning, from March, April 2020, you know what I mean, consistently. I've spoken to a series of anti-lockdown movement leaders. I've been the person since March, April, constantly arguing with fucking irritating soft left Twitterati influencer cunts online going, oh, they're all far right, going, fuck you. You know, I've been doing this since the beginning, going, hang on, you're going to tell me? I looked at a video of a Brisbane rally. Just, you know, I've seen countless of these. But for example, you know, arguing one of them last year going, the last Brisbane rally was introduced by a smoking ceremony by a prominent Queensland Aboriginal family. You know, I've heard of a fucking Invasion Day event that was basically become an anti-vax event. You know, Western Sydney delivered tens of thousands of multicultural community people, you know, Middle Eastern people and the like, you know, when Sydney had that big 40,000 person rally, you know. You're not going to tell me that this rally is purely far right. This is a lot of different people. I've been saying that since the beginning, and I've been sympathetic as fuck, you know what I mean? But I've tried to be sympathetic as fuck. But I also don't think – I'm not going to code it in bullshit with them, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to say you're wrong in my commentary, but I'm going to try and say why. You know what I mean? I'm going to deliver some commentary on it. And it's worked for me over time. I've had many, many people go, oh, you know, through your videos, I eventually, like, you irritated me. You're a smart ass. I am. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to hold your hand or, you know, treat you like an idiot. That's like, I'll call you and I'll call you a fuckwit. You know what I mean? But I've had lots of people who've said, oh, you know, I eventually came out of that movement and what have you, and, you know, they don't message you at the time, but once they've had a good 6 months out or what have you, they go, you know what, it's changed, and it's been good, you know what I mean? Like, but I've also had that dialogue with people in the movement. I come from a background of having looked at Nazis for years, being anti-fascist stuff. Those people are fucking filth. I don't have a hatred for anti-lockdown movement people at all. Yeah, I'm comparatively fine. I love them. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a big difference between someone who's a genocidal fucking racist maniac, you know, who wants to kill people, and someone who has reserves about the pandemic. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, that's very different. This is a real step down for me. So I'm very chill talking about it. Like, I'll tell them why I disagree and what have you, but we can have a chat. Yeah, the doors are always open with me and them. I have a conversation with them. A lot of them are getting increasingly hostile and they really don't like being called out. I understand everyone doesn't like it, but I'm happy to have a dialogue with them. You know what I mean? I just don't think that they're, you know, if you're a coronavirus denialist, I don't think you're a responsible participant in the conversation about how we take care of each other during the pandemic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I guess kind of one of the main reasons I was kind of wanting to chat is I just really want to kind of highlight, which you do with a lot of your content. You know, I understand. I don't know all the fucking answers. I'm sure I've got my blind spots. But I feel like I'm. You know, it just surprises me when people will see some of these grifters and just kind of, you know, buy it. They buy what's being sold to them. And I guess that would just kind of be, you know, my main thing that I kind of want out of this conversation is to just highlight that question. A lot of people say they watch Arvi just for the content and you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's like, well, when you're following six anti-vax or anti-lockdown pages, that's kind of your mental diet, you know, and it's difficult.
Yeah.
It operates very persistently on a subconscious level. And, you know, I'm happy to talk about the problems with all this. I want to get back to bloody, you know, remember when conspiracy theory used to be cool? They used to be seen as like out there thinkers.
I still get a real thrill out of looking at the different realms. You know what I mean? I really enjoyed doing it. I did a big two-part thing on QAnon last year.
Yep.
I feel that I got in a little before the big wave of everyone in the world being a big self-styled commentator on QAnon.
Yeah.
Eventually,
yep.
It just got boring. And once Trump got kicked out, I just didn't think there was much, particularly in Australia. Yeah, in America, you know, QAnon Anonymous podcast is the best. I need to speak awesome. Before. I fucking love them, you know. But I did a two-part thing about Aussie QAnon last year because I thought it was interesting. It's fun, you know what I mean? I mean, the good thing about QAnon, the fun thing about QAnon is it's like reading a cheesy spy novel.
Yeah.
It's like that, actually, if you're a QAnon adherent, but it's also like that if you're like a holier than thou snobby lefty going, oh, what are these lunatics looking at now? I heard actually Travis View from QAnon Anonymous said once, like, he gets this really uncomfortable feeling when the media talk to him about what are they thinking now. You know, he said like he feels it's a little bit like you know, being it was like in medieval times and being asked by the nobles, like, you know, what are the peasants reading in the entrails now? And I loved that because I vehemently disagree with anti-lockdown people and the conspiracists of it because I think it's dangerous, but I still fundamentally perceive myself as being, I said this to you at the beginning of the chat, bro, I'm down in the muck with them. I disagree with them. I'm down on the cunts. I just think they're fucking deluded and wrong. In fact, I see them as many of them being victims of opportunist parasites like Arvi Yemini because they don't have the vaccine. Like I said before, they don't have the history of political insight and being participating like some of us, you know, might or what have you. They don't have the luxury of that, and so they think that Arvi is telling them the truth. Mm. That's why it's my job. The job of people like me to target the big dogs, you know. I'll have a laugh at the rallies, but the people I've really got it in for is how you got onto me yeah. talking about Arvi Yemini.
Well, and that's exactly the same. Like, you know, I've got a lot of friends with a lot of different views, some more conspiratorial, some more hesitant, and, you know, I hope I'm not coming across as just being, you know, disrespectful to other people's views or anything, but just like you said, I'm more interested in the people, kind of the opportunists that are coming in, and they just seem to be very effective and they seem to be working, and I don't like it.
They are, yeah. Yeah.
I really don't like
it. But hey, look, they're very well funded.
Mm.
You know, they're incredibly well funded, and I tell you what, I did say with Arvi before that it took Arvi to train wreck his entire personal life. He's not just lucky. He's very good at what he does, you know.
Yeah.
We're lucky we don't have 100 Arvis like they do in America. You know what I mean? We're lucky for that. You know, think about being over there where every state has its own 5 Arvi Yeminis. You know how annoying it is for people in America? They're all kind of like that. You know what I mean? America's just really showy fucking people. You know, so they have, like, in fact, as an anti-fascist in Australia, I'm often looking at like American anti-fascist organizing and just going, Jesus, left and right, they all organize their, like, their fucking rallies are like WrestleMania. You know what I mean? It's just so trumped up and ridiculous. I'm just like, oh, fuck. Thank fuck I'm not in America organizing in the way I do here. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is that we should at least be thankful that, you know, Arvi's good at convincing people that he's not the opportunist, shameless, lying parasite dog that he is. But it takes someone like an Arvi Yemini to get to that point. And that's because the weaker ones all cave earlier, because cunts like me make them cave before they get there. And this is why I say I'm not. I don't pretend. I said to you before about me being the muck with them. I'm not saying I'm a fucking saint or an angel here. It's just because I'm a fucking lefty or I'm pro fucking responding to the pandemic. I'm a fucking cunt, mate. You know what I mean? But I have a certain series of politics, and if you stand against that, if you're a Muslim basher, I will be a very nasty human being. You know, I will do that. And it means that all the lesser versions of those people fall out, and all you end up left with is the real cream of the crop types. You know what I mean? It takes someone as dedicated and as talented at self-promotion as RV Emini to remain at the top, you know. Thank fuck we don't have any more, you know. But, hey, look, you know, there's a big network of people out there. I'm just one of the foghorns who talk, but there's a big, big, very connected network out there of people who constantly struggle to counter the messaging, you know. I don't have the audience that someone like an RV does, but I always just believe that, you know, what I do is a resource for when your uncle who starts sharing Yemeni videos, if you still got his ear and you go, listen, he's a fucking dog, then you can send me being a smart ass about him and you can at least learn a bit about why he's a dog. You know what I mean? So it's a resource, even if it's just for a few people. You know what I mean? I believe in vaccinating people's brains one at a time. It's the best I can do anyway. I'm just not that charming of a guy to get a huge audience. So I do what I can down here in the muck, bro.
Like you, I think you described yourself as a pest to pests. So, yeah.
Fucking oath. Yeah, fucking oath. I know. Again, you know, you're constantly being told, like Avi, even he thinks this is a big zinger, you know? Like, he always goes, oh, so much for the tolerant left. And I'm always saying, I'm not tolerant at all. I'm a cunt. I've always been a cunt. I'm not a normie. I'm not a fucking, you know, and I'm not aiming for a job with the ABC or SBS. They all seem to think that. In fact, lots of lefties say to me, like, oh, you should get a show. No, I'm doing what I do now. This is it. This is fine. I have people, you know what I mean? I have people who listen, you know what I mean? I'm only a visible part of a big network of activists and anti-fascists and organisers. And, you know, as the pandemic tapers off, and it will in time, then we'll be back out in the streets, and we'll be doing boots on ground organising, and it won't just be about these cunts and their messaging, because that's going to all taper off as well. Let's not forget, you know, it's already waning a little bit because the lockdowns are ending, so they don't look as dramatic and compelling as they used to, you know. Things will change, and I can't wait to get back to climate change activism. I'm not, you know, a climate leader, but I want to support them. But my auxiliary support that I provide, and I've been doing this for years, is I help the real activist movements to deal with the pests like Avi. That's my specialty. Do you know what I mean? Pest control, bro. I'm a pest that does pest control.
Tom, mate, we've just fucking clocked an hour, brother. But, yeah, thanks so much for a rant. It's fun to rant, isn't it?
It's fun to rant, you know. I'm inclined to do it, you know. Well, I've enjoyed the chat, you know. I hope that people got, you know, a bit of an understanding about that, you know. I know it's not edifying to talk about some of these pests all the time. It really isn't, you know what I mean? Because, again, as I said, I like doing the shit avant-garde comedy efforts and what have you, and I've got other things in me, you know, in my toolbox that I want to be able to create down the track. But, hey, you know, there's not many people that do this kind of content in Australia, and some of these big, as I said, in this house, we target the big dogs. So, you know, the influencers and the like, the real opportunists. So I think that's an important service, even if I think I should be doing other things. You know what? We don't all get to be a rock star. So I do that. So it's my little community service, my little pest community service, you know. But it's really good to talk to you about some of this stuff anyway. I could do it all day because it's really important, you know.
Yeah. No, likewise, mate. And again, yeah. I guess directing people to YouTube would probably be your primary source. You've done content on bloody Nazis in the Grampians and, you know, things that are going on.
Yeah, I've been doing anti-fascist stuff since 2016. So, I probably do a lot more organising on that behind the scenes than I do for I said this before, didn't I? You know what I mean? Like, try to ration out the amount of times you talk about bikey connected scumbags, right? You know, you get the stuff done, but not necessarily in the most foghorn way, you know. But yeah, I do weekly videos on my YouTube channel, which is Tom Tanuki, T-A-N-U-K-I, and you can see me talking about, yeah, sometimes the Nazi things, sometimes the anti-lockdown stuff, the political fringe. And I mean the left political fringe. I am no impartial commentator. I'm a lefty, you know what I mean? Arby calls me a far left extremist. I think that just means someone that makes videos, though. I don't really know. I don't know how extreme my videos are. I just think I'm a smart ass and I don't like it. But anyway, I'm an unashamed left, anti-racist, anti-fascist lefty, and I eventually will be back out in the streets doing useful shit, you know what I mean, as the pandemic tapers off. That's the dream anyway. So please follow me on there or Twitter or Instagram.
Beautiful. Thanks, Tom. And thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.